You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
Welcome to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. My guest for today is Alistair Fulton, who is the Vice President and General Manager of Semtech's Wireless and Sensing Products Group. He joined Semtech in 2018 with over 25 years of experience in the IoT, connected devices, machine-to-machine, and analytics spaces. Before joining Semtech, Alistair led the development of Hitachi's Lumada Industrial IoT platform, the leading visionary IoT platform in Gartner's 2018 Magic Quadrant. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and let us know if you have any feedback in the comments. Thanks.
Well, Alistair, thank you so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Can you tell us a little bit more about the services that Semtech offers and your role within the organization?
Okay, sure. So Semtech overall is a provider of high-end silicon products in the main. We've got three primary business units, of which I lead one. The other two business units being a signal integrity product business, which is focused on high bandwidth data solutions, primarily for data center customers. So if you're a customer of Facebook, you know, somewhere in the back end, there are products from Semtech that are facilitating the transition of data across that network. The second business is a protection business. And so for all of the microelectronics that we use around us each day, actually one of the biggest threats is electrostatic radiation. And so the electrostatic field that we as humans generate is normally sufficient to fry the components in your mobile phone or your laptop or even your car. And so what the protection business unit does is provide silicon products that protect, that prevent those surges in energy reaching fragile components. And then the third business is the wireless and sensing business, which I lead. Now, as the name suggests, it's made up of two parts, really. One is focused on the delivery of wireless solutions, principally for IoT. I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go. But I have several other businesses within my overall organization, including a sensing product business, which produces proximity sensors that are used by most of the major mobile phone OEMs and wearables providers, that variously do things like managing the power output of mobile devices to stay within FCC guidelines or the guidelines of the regulator for the geography that you're in, to reduce the risk of excessive exposure to customers. And there's also a range of uses of those products which fall into, you know, touch sensing, smart sensing, non-graphic user interface devices like earbuds to be able to turn the device on or off, or conserve power by only switching it on when it's in close proximity. And there's a couple of other parts of the business. We have a wireless charging business, and then finally, high reliability business, which we actually have manufacturing capability for in Mexico. And that business produces components, but components that are put into the space shuttle and, you know, military jets. So components, though simple in nature, need to be relied upon 100% of the time to support, you know, life or purpose or function. So that's kind of the overall business. About 550 people in total, of which a couple of hundred fall into the high rel manufacturing function. The others are distributed across the rest.
Well, very exciting. Sounds like a lot of advanced technologies you guys are leading. Curious, if your experience in Internet of Things, IoT, connected devices, what are the latest trends within those areas of IoT that you're currently researching and perhaps looking to implement at Semtech?
So we see a significant amount of unmet demand for what are generally called massive IoT solutions. Now, the IoT, I think, is beset by many different definitions for the same thing. So I would argue that IoT is IoT, and that is the ability to generate data from everything. To me, in many ways, that's the promise of the IoT, rather than basing the optimization of my production process on guesswork or knowledge. I'm going to base it on data, and I'm going to generate data from every single step of the production process, every single asset, to inform the decisions I'm going to make. And increasingly in high process intensive manufacturing industries, you're seeing those sorts of solutions really become the competitive differentiator. But we see that trend continuing, and when you see the sometimes outlandish forecasts of connected devices, if there's 50 billion connected devices in the world, the very great majority of those devices are going to be low-cost, remote, mobile, or movable assets for which a low-powered, battery-powered, and very affordable sensor is the required solution. Because if I'm going to instrument everything, it needs to be done in a cost-effective way if the value I generate is going to be worth the money it cost me to get there. The other major, so we see major trend in terms of volume there. The other trend, which is closely aligned, is actually the increasing simplification of building IoT solutions. I've spent a large part of my life on the platform side of IoT, building tools and services which developers can use to build very compelling solutions. And I would say today, a proficient high school student can build an extremely compelling IoT solution, featuring complex machine learning or AI capabilities, in an afternoon. Whereas, 5 or certainly 10 years ago, that was often the work of many months. And so this trend towards ever-increasing accessibility, you could call it consumerization to a degree, is something that we see driving the application layer very much. And it's something that we take into our own product strategy to drive simplification into the endpoint, because primarily our technologies are used to get data from A to B in an extremely low cost and extremely power efficient way. So think small sensor running on a coin cell battery for 10 years, sending data over 50 miles. So driving that trend of simplification throughout the end-to-end solution development process, I think we see as critical.
That's very interesting, and thank you for sharing some of these trends in IoT and a lot of those advanced technologies. I appreciate you sharing that. Just to take that a little bit further, I'm curious, from your perspective, what are the biggest challenges that you have experienced when it comes to that, let's say, digital transformation standpoint, especially when it comes to adoption of these new technologies through IoT? And are there any recommendations to overcome such barriers?
Funnily enough, the complexity and the challenge is not the technology. There have been, granted some major improvements, as I mentioned, on the cloud platform side, but this slow uptake, and it's increasing in speed, but the slow uptake of IoT overall has been driven by more commercial challenges than anything else. And I think first and foremost amongst those is the need to fix on a very clear business case. Now, through the course of my career, I've seen customers go from a very research-oriented viewpoint. Wouldn't it be interesting if I could build a solution that did X? And I would say that changed probably 3 to 4 years ago very materially. You saw a very strong pivot from those sorts of projects, which sometimes came to fruition and sometimes stayed as science projects. But you saw a very firm pivot toward business case-driven, value-driven. And with that shift, the audience changed. The audience changed from CTO level to COO or CFO level. And the questions that customers started to ask were, is it worth me doing this? And how much production improvement am I going to get? And how much risk do I avoid? So the first challenge, I think, in IoT is establishing a very clear business case. The cost side of that equation, I think, is the most challenging of all. Because when you look at the available tools in the marketplace, again, until quite recently, there's been lots of bits and pieces that you could put together. but it's the putting together that's the issue. And the putting together or the integration has driven significant amounts of cost. So, you know, focus on the value, focus on building a viable business case and a very clear cost structure, I think, is the way that you overcome that. I think there are other challenges as well. I mean, I would say a second challenge is really just basic confusion. There are many piece part solutions in the marketplace that cover every aspect of an IoT solution, all of which purport to work perfectly. And I think all too often, you know, customers find that when they, you know, when they try a network technology, you know, it doesn't work for the length of time promised, or the cost that if it's a cellular operator driven technology, the cost is too high for the business case to bear. But it's very difficult for customers to figure out, you know, what's true, what's not, what's going to work for me, what's not. And so I think, you know, there the solution is seek good advice, build capability, and go to trusted vendors. There are lots of interesting edge cases, but at the end of the day, if you're trying to deliver a business case and you're trying to deliver business value, you need some measure of certainty. And I'd say the third challenge is just inertia. A lot of the use cases that we're talking about, they're at the margin. So being able to deliver a 5% reduction in my cost of manufacturing for a component, in and of itself, it might be a material amount of money, but when I look at my entire end-to-end P&L as a, when I'm using again the example of a manufacturing company, which of these small pots of gold do I go after first? Do I look at the cost of my staffing or the cost of my facilities or the cost of my... So I think very often the biggest and the longest term and the most sustainable savings are to be found through IoT solutions, but very often the incremental nature of those savings creates a degree of inertia. And again, I think the way that you overcome that challenge goes back to my first answer, which is business case. Know why you're doing something. Know the value that it's going to deliver.
Mm-hmm. Which seems, you know, so basic and rudimentary, yet oftentimes overlooked, where teams want to jump straight to into solutioning and, you know, implementation aspect.
Well, I think also, you know, the problem with IoT is technology, as the problem with most technology-driven markets is the technology. You know, it's very easy for people to get fixated on the technology. At the end of the day, we are, you know, very often folks in this space are engineers at our hearts. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it requires a degree of self-awareness to realize you may care about the technology and you may know it intimately, but at the end of the day, the customer doesn't care. The customer cares about outcome, not about how you get there. They need to know it's going to work. They need to know how much it's going to cost. But to be honest with you, particularly as the audience becomes COO and CFO in nature, they don't care about technology. And technology just serves mm-hmm. to confuse.
Right. Couldn't agree more with you on that point. You briefly mentioned from skill set perspective, some of the engineers and, you know, highly technical skill set. Curious, when hiring for Semtech, for those candidates that interview with you, do you tend to get creative with your interviews, or do you keep them pretty standard? And also, what do you look for in some of their responses?
I don't think I've ever given an interview that was done an interview that was the same as the last. Sometimes the frustration of my HR partners. But you know what I'm looking for in an interview, particularly when people get to my stage, it's generally the last round, and they've been through a loop to understand whether or not they have the technical skills for the role, etc. But I'm really looking for personal characteristics, actually, and I think, you know, there's a lot of management thought being written about, you know, how do you evaluate skills and capabilities. And I think that many folks, myself included, go through a re-education process. And you go back to actually start to listen to your gut. We're taught these structures, and we're taught these tools, and we're taught these approaches. And we're taught them in the belief that if you follow these simple steps, then you'll do a good interview. And we don't listen to our gut feel. As humans, I think our best ability to assess another individual is sensing. So I go quite a lot on gut. But what I'm looking for is a really very specific set of things. In IoT, in common with many other technology spaces, the one thing that's not certain is the future, and the one thing that's not clear is how to get there. And so if as an individual your mindset is based on determining what you consider the facts to be and then reverse engineering the world to conform to those facts, you will fail. If your outlook is one of experimentation, acceptance that most of the time you're going to be wrong, that's the sort of characteristic. What our organization is characterized by an acceptance that we are wrong most of the time, but an ability to determine that we're wrong rapidly and to do something about it. So it's that sort of mindset that I'm looking for. Very often I interview people who come, you know, from fantastic backgrounds, and they fail the interview because they say, I know what the answer is, and here's what I'm going to do about it. That to me is a red flag. I'm looking for an answer that's much more, it could be one of these three outcomes. Here's how I'm going to evaluate, and here's what I'm going to do when I'm wrong. So I think that's certainly very central. The other thing I'm generally looking for is diversity and customer focus. We run a what I would describe as a lean, agile development model, which is something that you more typically see in software environments. And we build a lot of software and services, but it's not an approach you typically see in silicon. And it's an approach that we've adopted specifically because we don't know what direction the market's going to go in. And actually, IoT by definition is everything. So we've got to cover, you know, a myriad of different use cases. What I'm looking for there is, again, it's an acceptance of being wrong, you know, working with customers very closely, understanding what customers are looking for, and having a diversity of view. I think one of the disadvantages in technology, or one of the disadvantages technology's had, has been an over-dominance of, I mean, frankly, you know, white middle-class men. And I think that the world does not look like that. And our customers are not like that. And I'm not necessarily saying that one has to be of the same background as your customer in order to be able to understand them. But I think you can see myriad of examples in the technology space where it's very clear that the product was designed from a particular perspective. And as a consequence, it doesn't actually meet the needs of the market. So I have a geographically dispersed team, as we were talking about. So we have, you know, R&D presence in China, in Europe, and in Mexico, et cetera. But also within that, we recruit for a diversity of viewpoint. I generally look for people who disagree with me, to be honest with you, because, you know, I'm probably wrong. I'd rather have someone who's prepared to challenge that and to come with a fresh perspective.
And that makes sense, and thank you for sharing that. And there you go. For some of our listeners, if you're interviewing with Alistair, you have some insider information on what he's looking for. But I agree with you in some of the things that you were talking about, especially, you know, you don't want somebody to come in and be the yes man and just basically follow the instructions or the direction. Mm-hmm. You need somebody who is able to challenge the status quo and actually bring that fresh perspective from the outside.
Exactly. I think there's been a lot of companies that have followed the path, and I worked for one of them, of deciding that they knew the right answer and then employing an army of salespeople to go and tell customers that they needed the product. And if they didn't listen, they shouted louder. And I think that those are days are gone. And flexibility and the ability to listen to your customer is critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And On the next question that I have somewhat relates to what we just talked about, some of the hiring strategies, because that's our space. That's what we deal with, whether that's, you know, a CIO, a CTO, or the security engineer or site reliability engineer. Those are some of the extremely hard to find skill sets. And, you know, in certain areas of those industries, the unemployment is almost in the negative. I'm curious, from your perspective, since you guys are dealing with a lot of the advanced technologies as well, what are the most in-demand skill sets that you guys are currently looking for, and which ones are the hardest to find, especially in that IoT space? I'm more curious around what strategies do you deploy to attract that kind of hard-to-find top talent to your teams?
I think it's closely tied to what I see as our you know, driving missions in life. One of which, or far afield, attached to a pipeline or a vehicle or an animal, or, you know. So dependability at the hardware layer is critical. And the skills involved in doing that really, they fall into three different buckets. Analog design, which is the physical infrastructure of a silicon chip. Digital design, which is, you know, without going down the rat hole, is closely aligned to analog, but focused much more on FPGA-based implementations, and then a system-level view of how the system comes together. I'm happy to say that in our space, we pride ourselves on having the best in the industry, and we have a handful of folks whose expertise is without parallel. But finding people with that skill set, sadly, increasingly, is much harder to do. The other part of our mission is actually taking that technology and making it easy to use, because there's not many people who can or want to work down at the bare metal layer to design sensors. There's a lot of people who are out there with brilliant product ideas, but without that skill set. So building software and service abstraction layers to make that hardware manageable and accessible, and to simplify the way in which you as a developer write an application and a solution that uses that hardware, That's key to the IoT being successful as a whole. And the skill set that I'm recruiting for there is typically cloud services development and deployment. There's a lot of folks in this space, and so you could argue that the skill set is relatively available in market. But when you look at the cloud developer base, there are not many within that base who have either already done or have the capability to build enterprise-grade, globally scalable services in a way that is accessible to our customers. It turns out to be phenomenally hard to build a highly secure end-to-end solution that you can kind of set and forget as a customer, that's flexible to your needs. There's a lot of it's rather like a swan. You know, it looks nice and simple on the surface, but there's a hell of a lot going on underneath. And finding engineers who understand that complexity, can digest it and turn it into a simple service is pretty tough sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that, because I can definitely relate to some of the skills that you're talking about that just go a little bit beyond some niche domain technical skill set, that you need a lot broader outlook on certain things, especially when you're working on some of the enterprise solutions. So that's definitely relatable. Last but not least, I'm sure you read a lot, you know, you deal with a lot of advanced technologies, complex things. Curious, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why?
That's a good question. Having just come off the Christmas break, I managed to spend some time catching up on my reading. One of my wishes in life is that I had more time to read, because I think the day that you stop learning as an individual is the day that you start to decay. But it's always at the end of a long list. I would say, luckily, I spend a lot of time on planes, given the geographical diversity of my team, and I get to spend at least some of that time reading. So the book I'm reading at the moment, actually this week, hopefully I should finish it, is it's a book called In the Wake, on blackness and being. And it's by an author called, what's her name, Christina Sharp. It's actually a study of the carryover effects of some of the world's history around slave trade, and the impact that has had on the development of communities, principally communities of color, and the lasting effects of that history, and really what you know we need to and can do to address some of those carryovers, and frankly the imperative to do so. So that's kind of my if you like pleasure reading at the moment. In terms of books I always recommend, the one book I do always recommend to people is a book called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. And it purports to be a kind of a guide to it's like an add water guide to innovation. And that's not the reason I recommend it, because I think that there is no formula for innovation. But it lays out a very customer-centric way of thinking about product challenges and a way to take that insight and turn it into product and iterate rapidly. And it's really I first read it when I was at Microsoft, when we were driving through a transition toward lean agile development from what had been a very traditional development model. And I gave it to a bunch of engineers in my team and saw many of them really struggle with the content. It was really a kind of a shock to the system that you would, you know, go and ask a customer and you know, never build anything alone, always build it with the customer in hand. But that's a book I always recommend. Other books, I would say Dan Ariely, one of his titles was Predictably Irrational, which I think is also, it's an interesting study on you know, the impact of randomness, you know, the impact of chance upon outcomes. And it really, I think, the core message is nothing is predictable in the world, and you better be able to understand and deal with random factors as and when they hit you, and they'll hit you. But it's quite amusing. It's also quite funny, actually, quite a lot of it in terms of the examples used. And then finally, the book that I always read if I ever get ahead of myself and forget what it's all about, I always go back to a book called The C Programming Language. And that was written by Kernighan and Ritchie. And for any of your listeners who've been through computer science courses, I would imagine this certainly was part of the featured reading. And I think whenever you get to the point of thinking that you've got a handle on the world and you've somehow figured out the formula, go back and read a textbook on programming in C, and that will ground you every day of the week.
Yeah, that's a good one, especially now that for those that have gone on and gained all the experience in development, going back to some of the basics, I'm sure that will refresh a lot of you know, some of the rudimentary things that should be in place. So I can relate. Thank you for sharing that. Alistair, I know you're a very busy guy. I really appreciate you finding time to jump on with us on the IV podcast, and I look forward to reconnecting with you in a couple of years to see where you're currently at and how much have changed since the last time we spoke. Thanks so much for your time.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Likewise, very much enjoyable speaking to you.
Thank you for listening to the IV podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivpodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.